Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. We all strive to be healthy. Typically, this involves a combination of eating right, getting enough rest and exercise, and doing the things we think of as medical, going to the doctor, undergoing screening tests such as mammograms, and learning about the latest medical science, or trying to keep up with it anyway. But increasingly, we've become aware that our overall health, as individuals and in our communities, depends on more than just the healthcare system. The vast majority of what determines our health comes from factors like our education and employment, and our engagement in social networks. Neighborhoods, too, play a role. How much walking are you able to achieve on a daily basis? Is your neighborhood safe from violence, from traffic, from pollution? Enter a group called Civic Ninjas, founded by my guest today, Scott Phillips. Tulsa's Civic Ninjas are a group of volunteer programmers, designers, entrepreneurs, and hobbyists who look to improve the community through collaborative problem solving. As but one example, Civic Ninjas has designed a prototype app called Health Around Me, which pulls in data from several large public databases to paint a picture of neighborhood health in a novel way. The Civic Ninjas have worked to solve a number of thorny urban problems using technology, and not just limited to determining the health of neighborhoods. Other areas the Ninjas have made an impact in include disaster relief and improvements in our public transportation system. Scott Phillips was recognized for his work with Civic Ninjas 3 years ago by President Obama when he was invited to Washington as a White House champion of change in civic hacking. Scott Phillips, founder of Civic Ninjas, is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Scott Phillips, welcome to Medical Monday. Let's start really basic, and I just want to ask you, really, who are the Civic Ninjas?
So Civic Ninjas are a group of technologists that are committed to solving community and municipal problems through technology.
Give us an example of a problem that you've solved.
So one of the ways Civic Ninjas, or what we also refer to as civic technologists and civic hackers, work are through hackathons. Take the word hacker, take the word marathon, put them together. You have a hackathon event where like-minded folks come together to work on software, develop solutions to problems. We actually had a National Day of Civic Hacking event back in 2013 that fell about a week after the tornadoes ripped through Moore, Oklahoma. And at that event, FEMA actually reached out to us to offer their support if we were going to do any projects related to disasters, which prompted a team of us to look at opportunities to help solve problems related to disasters. So if anyone remembers the coverage of Hurricane Katrina, you probably remember seeing bright orange X's painted on the side of buildings. I now can tell you that those orange X's were related to the urban search and rescue process where buildings are searched to look for survivors or victims. And so we actually built a mobile app that virtualized the search process, allowing searchers to virtually initiate and then finish a search at a dwelling using an app instead of spray paint. And that provided real-time tracking from the base of operations for the search teams to actually monitor the process and progress of the searching.
So is that something FEMA field agents, I guess if you want to call them FEMA responders, use now, that app?
So the Oklahoma Urban Search and Rescue Team, we've done some training with them. And in all likelihood, in the next disaster, they would be using it. Fortunately, we don't have a lot of disasters, so we haven't seen that happen yet.
Wow. And so that was something you said that came out of a response, if you will, to the Moore tornado of 2013. And did FEMA put out an RFP, a request for proposals, or it was more of a challenge, sort of like help us make this process quicker, more efficient, et cetera?
Well, that's actually one of the stories I love about the Urban Search and Rescue Project. The National Day of Civic Hacking was a national event with cities participating all over the country. FEMA happened to be tied into the National Day of Civic Hacking well ahead of the event. But when the Moore tornado hit, they looked for the hackathons that were closest to the disaster scene and reached out directly to them. But if you look at the time from the point at which they reached out to us, there was literally about a three-day period where we engaged a federal agency. We subsequently reached out to two state-level agencies. And so a team of volunteers came together in 3 days to solve a major community challenge related to disasters.
Wow. And it's a very interesting story. So how big is Civic Ninjas? I mean, how many people work with you?
If you look at the various hackathons and events we've produced, there's easily 50 or more people that have been involved with our projects. There tends to be a core group of somewhere between 15 and 20 people that stay more actively involved.
And we should point out, this is something people are just doing on their own time because of their passion for, you know, solving community problems, as it were. This is not something anyone is paid to do.
That is correct.
I want to clarify something else. You used the word hackathon or, you know, hacking. And let's just, I mean, for many of us in the listening audience, I mean, we think of a hacker sort of pejoratively. That is like a Russian hacker or a hacker breaking into a bank system or something to cause disruption. But this is hacking in the good sense, right? This is a sort of a euphemism for coding or for doing, you know, virtuous things.
That is correct. If you look at the evolution of the civic technology movement, very early on, we preferred to call it civic hacking, but I think one of the reasons the terminology has evolved is the point you put out. But one of the stories I often tell is the origins of the term hacker. The etymology of that word goes back to World War II. And during World War II, there would be these bombers that would come back from bombing runs that were all shot up. The pilots would barely land them, and they would hand them off to the ground crew. And some of these planes would come back more than flyable. Some of the planes would come back pretty shot up, and some of them would come back, and it was a miracle that they even made it back. And one of the things that pilots would do is they would hand it to the ground crew and say, I think this one's for the hackers. And what would actually happen is overnight, the mechanics would have to kind of triage the plane inventory and figure out which ones they could get flying again. And what they would do is the planes that were never going to be flyable again, they would literally hack parts off of these planes to get the other planes that could be flyable again back into the air. And in doing that, they often cut corners or avoided the rule book or FAA guidelines, if you will, on exactly how to get the plane back together. But ultimately, they were successful. And so the way we see hacking refers to doing what is necessary to affect change.
That's interesting. I didn't know that origin of the word. That's pretty fascinating. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann. It's Medical Monday. We're speaking with Scott Phillips, who's founder of Civic Ninjas, which is an organization committed to solving community and municipal problems through technology. And Scott, before the ID, you were telling us about a project that came to you through FEMA, really, for disaster response. And if I understood correctly, you were recognized for this work by no less than the White House.
Yes. Back in 2013, when we did this project, President Obama has a program called Champions of Change, and I was very fortunate to be recognized as a champion of change in civic hacking. For that, I was invited to the White House for a ceremony.
And that's the official it was officially called Champion of Change in Civic Hacking.
Exactly, yes. It was a great day. There were eight people nationally selected as Champions of Change in Civic Hacking, and I'm still in touch with a few of those folks. And it was great to see the diversity of people and how they were making changes in their communities and changes both nationally and globally. But one of the fun things that came out of that was during lunch at that event, I happened to be sitting next to somebody from the James L. Knight Foundation. Any regular NPR listener is certainly familiar with them.
Yes, indeed.
And conversation with the Knight Foundation folks subsequently led to one of the projects that I consider to be the most transformative project that we've encountered to date.
That the project called Health Around Me?
That is correct.
Yeah, so that's how you and I think, became acquainted. Tell us, what is Health Around Me?
So Health Around Me, if you look at the origins of the project, one day I was in a conversation, and we were thinking through several of the projects that Civic Ninjas had been working on, and it prompted us to ask ourselves, what do we know about the health around me? And I can pull up an iPhone, and I can find out the closest dry cleaners or the coolest bar with the most check-ins or what my neighbor paid for their house. But what do we actually know about the health around us? And the answer is very little. The example I like to use is, let's say you're looking to buy a new house. You've narrowed it down to two separate neighborhoods. Which neighborhood is the healthiest neighborhood? It's a concept we've never really thought to ask. But in today's data-driven world, These are all things that we can really easily figure out, assuming we build a kind of user interface that allows people to access that data.
So let's carry the hypothetical forward. I'm buying a house, or I want to buy a house. I'm looking at two neighborhoods. What are the, I guess, metrics that your app would pull in, or what is the data that would help me make that decision?
Well, if you look at the original vision for the app, we assumed we would be looking at what we refer to as traditional health metrics, blood pressure rates, heart attack rates, life expectancy, things along these lines. And like one of the things we used to say when we used the neighborhood analogy was maybe you've narrowed it down to two neighborhoods. One has a park in the neighborhood and one does not. Is it natural that you want to live in the neighborhood with the park? Well, perhaps the neighborhood with the park has more expensive houses, and as a result, your stress of having a higher mortgage could very well offset the addition of having a park. But as we dug into this opportunity, we actually, frankly, stumbled across an even larger opportunity. And once we started digging into data related to traditional health metrics, we started to see some conflicting information. And I know on your program you've had lots of people that have talked about health disparities in Tulsa. There's been a few different studies that have looked at the 14-year life expectancy difference between two zip codes in Tulsa. And when we were trying to understand what data could help us show why that is happening, we kind of intuitively assumed that this related to access to healthcare and quality of healthcare. But once we actually started looking at the data, we didn't necessarily see that being the case. So that led us to stumble across a world that I know you've covered on this program, social determinants of health. And ultimately what we learned was the air you breathe, the house you live in, the walkability of your neighborhood, the food you may or may not have access to, the jobs you may or not have access to, the type of friends you have access to, the incarceration rates in your neighborhood, the crime rates in your neighborhood. There's all these little slivers of information that in aggregate represent social determinants of health. And the mind-blowing data point is that ultimately social determinants of health represents up to 80% of public health outcomes.
Okay, I'm with you so far. It's a stretch because I think you're right. Intuitively, we want to look at access to health care, right? So access to, you know, medical help, and certainly those things we've come to take as proxies for good health, you know, a blood pressure, a cholesterol, et cetera. And what you're saying is you guys took a deep dive into this data and were, I guess, surprised to find it, you know, really that stuff either wasn't so available or didn't make much of a difference. But then where did you find the data? I guess I'm curious as to how you got it, were able to compile this, essentially this free data that was out there, just not sort of looked at in perhaps the right way.
Well, I think, you know, we certainly can't necessarily take credit for looking at this uniquely the first time. The element we brought to it was the level of resolution. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has probably pioneered more of this work than most people, but they generally have looked at it at the county level, where being technologists, being experienced at kind of geo-aggregating data, we were able to start looking at this data down to the census tract level, which gives us a much greater resolution.
How much smaller is that than a county? Or how many census tracts make up a county on average or something?
I mean, a census tract gets down to a few square blocks.
Okay, so much higher resolution,
right,
as you're saying. Interesting.
Exactly.
And that's from the U.S. Census, for example? Or where do you pull that information from?
Yeah, if you look at how U.S. Census does their data aggregation, they get down to what they refer to as the census tract level.
And so when you're building this app, where else are you pulling in data from? Is it simply from the U.S. Census database? Or where does, because the census I don't think of as necessarily recording health-specific statistics, but you're saying embedded in there, whether it's, I guess, zip code or address or age or demographic, what is it that lets you kind of is it a calculation or an aggregation that helps you determine, you know, which neighborhood is healthier?
If you look at the way this played out, once we became aware of social determinants of health, we again stumbled across an organization called HealthyPeople.gov, which is a program underneath the federal government's Health and Human Services Agency. And HealthyPeople.gov they've got a pretty creative approach to their mission in life in that they set objectives on 10-year intervals for improving health metrics in the U.S. In the last 5 years or so, they had gotten interested in social determinants of health and how they can set guidelines and objectives related to them. So the healthypeople.gov people developed a model for social determinants of health that divides the various data points that relate to social determinants of health into five separate buckets. And those five separate buckets, in no particular order, are economic stability, education, access to health care, built environment, and community.
And breaking that down a little bit, like, for example, economic stability would refer to, you know, employment opportunities or having an income, or education would be, you know, educational attainment. And built environment would include not only like the neighborhood itself, but access to transportation perhaps, or, you know, the roads, quality of things like that.
Yeah, the model goes further than that. And then we developed our own model where we looked at data sources we had access to, which there's a dozen or so different data sets that we used in our aggregation. Census was certainly part of that. Behavioral risk factor surveillance system, which is another effort, Dartmouth Atlas of Health, I forget the full name of it. There's a handful of other data sets that we used that all aggregated into this. But back to your original question, if you look at economic stability, census data tells us average commute times for people. It shows us employment levels for people. So there is a lot of data that people don't traditionally associate with health outcomes that we can use in our model that becomes a predictor.
And so, again, back to the hypothetical two-neighborhood model. So I'm envisioning an app where I guess, type in an address or something, and or two addresses, and then I press the button, you know, calculator go or something, and then it says, okay, this one's healthier, and it might tell me why. Is that how it works, or does it work on a sort of a map function? When you say geo-aggregation, I'm picturing, you know, using GPS-type data or something like that.
You know, when we developed the kind of proof of concept for Health Around Me, we were technologists that kind of took the technology, gee whiz approach to what can we do with this data? How do we present this data? So one of the first things we did with it was attempt to develop models to kind of score the various buckets of SDOH.
Social determinants of health. Yeah.
And so we experimented with numeric scores. We experimented with number scores. And we even got to the point where we experimented with simply color coding things as being green, yellow, or red. Because one of the painful realizations we had is if somebody's living in a challenged area, we don't necessarily want to just show them that their area is as bad as maybe people are telling them it is. So probably the most powerful thing beyond understanding this that came out of the project was developing what we called our Take Action database, where beyond simply showing people the challenges in their area, we actually provide geolocated resources where people can take action to correct or offset the challenges their area faces.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. We're speaking with Scott Phillips, the founder of Civic Ninjas, which is a Tulsa-based organization committed to solving community and municipal problems through technology. And we were talking about an app, an open source app, and I want to clarify what that means, called Health Around Me, that essentially allows the user to compare neighborhoods and determine, based on publicly available data, but aggregated in a sort of a new way, to determine which neighborhood might be healthier, for example. Open source, those of us that are more on the more Luddite end of the spectrum, just means essentially that the code is available for amending or adding to. It means it's certainly not a proprietary product that you're selling. It's open source, which means people can kind of join in and improve things. Is that the idea?
Yeah, if you look at the open source software movement, it's a movement that's evolved over the last 20 years or so, where people realize that there's limitations to software sets that are kind of proprietary or even legacy, where the software doesn't necessarily get updated as frequently as you might want it to. And so the pioneer of open source software was an operating system called Linux, which was based on the Unix operating system, which was a mainframe computing system that was then converted to work on the the personal computer. And Linux opened the door and kind of pioneered the concept that, again, community-minded developers could contribute their time to evolve software that the community could then benefit from. So within the civic hacking or civic technology movement, we've had a similar goal in evolving open source software that solves these community problems.
Now, how did you yourself, a little more on the biography here, get involved in this? I mean, it sounds like you are the founder of Civic Ninjas, and it sounds like you've been engaged in this type of work mostly as a passion, as wanting to solve some community-wide problems. But did you read a lot as a kid? Were you involved with computers from an early age or what? I mean, how did you fall into this world?
Many people that know me have similar questions. At the core, I'm an entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur, and I tell people I wear lots of different hats in this community. And the biggest hat I wear is a proponent of entrepreneurship and its transformative potential in communities. So being passionate about entrepreneurship and wanting to help grow more entrepreneurs in Tulsa, I started exploring ways to affect that type of outcome. And in moving towards growing grassroots organic technology and innovation community, I saw kind of a natural progress where civic hackers were kind of emerging and being effective at growing community, and realized that was something we could amplify here.
And so if I understood correctly in some of my reading, Civic Ninjas is part of also something called the Maker Movement. Is that true? Can you explain what that is?
If somebody happens to go to, let's say, Civic Ninjas' website, we talk about Civic Ninjas being focused on the convergence of civic technology, the Maker Movement, and entrepreneurship. Because those three movements, I believe, are democratizing how we live, work, and play. And the Maker Movement is a similar grassroots organic movement where people are creating physical, real-world products. It's kind of a resurgence of the DIY tinkerer movement, where people are inspired to create unique and interesting new products and new technologies.
And so one of the things I think you've also been, you know, heavily involved with, for example, is the Hardesty Fab Lab. I think you were on the board of that, perhaps, or helped bring it to Tulsa. When I think about makers or people, you know, sort of very creative hobbyists who want to create things, I mean, getting involved with things like 3D printing, is that an example of the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, that is correct. I was one of the original core founding board members of Fab Lab Tulsa.
And so I like the way you bring together kind of the idea of civic ninjas and solving problems and civic hacking and open source and the maker movement. What kinds of things do you see going forward for civic ninjas in terms of other types of problems? I mean, there's really, of course, I'm having you on Medical Monday to talk specifically about healthcare. Well, not so much healthcare, but globally, the concept of health and social determinants, as we've discussed. But for example, I read on your website, there's another initiative that it seems like you're behind or part of called the Citizen Power Brigade. And this is, again, sort of in the vein of, we talked about earlier on the program in the FEMA response, but disaster relief. So this has certainly a health implication. Tell us about the Citizen Power Brigade and that idea.
So Citizen Power Brigade is another project that came out of our working with the White House. President Obama, back in 2014, launched an initiative after Hurricane Sandy to kind of improve the disaster response and resiliency of pretty much both the federal programs and states. And so they had us involved with some of their efforts, including the first ever White House hackathon for disaster response. And in our work in the disaster space, we had identified that our reliance on smartphones and other electronics devices has kind of changed the needs of disaster response. If you think about a massive disaster hitting, our phones, we will have them for about 24 hours until the batteries are dead. And at that point, we will be looking for places to charge them. So the Civic Ninjas team that worked on that project looked for ways to provide wide-scale mobile emergency power in disasters. And ultimately, the solution we came up with was to use hybrid electric vehicles to provide the mobile emergency power. A lot of people don't realize, but hybrid electric vehicle is essentially a rolling generator. So they're the perfect platform to use for mobile emergency power in disasters. But beyond kind of the linear outcome of using them in that way, the real key to Citizen Power Brigade is that we empower hybrid electric vehicle owners to be a new type of first responder. So at that point, we're really transitioning them from a potential victim in a disaster to be a supporter or first responder that's providing assistance during disasters.
So what's the status of this project idea? Is it liable to get some backing or some government oomph behind it to roll it out? I mean, I could see where there might be jurisdictions that say, hey, we love the idea, but, you know, we don't want to be responsible for you guys calling yourselves first responders. Let the professionals handle it, and, you know, you do gooder stay at home or something like that. Do you run into that kind of bureaucracy or that kind of obstacle?
We've built a working relationship with FEMA and then some of the urban search and rescue teams, as we referenced earlier. And all of them seem very interested in the Citizen Power Brigade solution. The key is to actually have a structured response. So if you look at the way CPB is evolving, we've got a process to onboard people and get them involved and train them into how they would deploy and things along those lines. So it's not a matter of just, you know, run what you brung, show up in a disaster. There's definitely structure to the organization.
That's very interesting. Well, I mean, this interview flew by. And Scott, I want to really thank you for sharing some of your work with us, because it's very interesting. I really do look forward to seeing what the Civic Ninjas can do going forward in terms of both the entrepreneurial activity, but also, you know, these types of civic projects that seem to really benefit kind of all of us.
Certainly, John, thank you for having us on today. It's a very exciting time to be a civic technologist, because the planets are aligned, where we've got a technology stack that's incredibly powerful, and we've got community interest that's, you know, interested in actually a kind of a better world, a better life for people. So we do have an opportunity to really do some amazing things.
That's great. Well, Scott Phillips, thanks. It's been a pleasure. Scott Phillips is the founder of Civic Ninjas, an organization committed to solving community and municipal problems through technology. And if you'd like more information, you can go to their website at civicninjas.org. Scott Phillips is the founder of Civic Ninjas. For more information, check out their website, civicninjas.org. Well, that's our show for today. Studio Tulsa Medical Monday is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. If you've missed a recent show, you can listen online anytime at studiotulsa.org. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.